Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
All right, welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Smith.
And I'm Sia Yasotornra.
Today we have another amazing guest, another badass woman, we can say. We love having all our guests, but women, I mean, it's just natural. We love having
our
women,
peoples.
Right? Yes, our peoples. So today, Sia, I'll let you do the introduction.
So today I would love to welcome Maria Breckenridge. She is a consultant extraordinaire, very high in demand right now with an expertise in smart cities. So today's discussion is really going to be about what the hell is a smart city and
we're going to introduce you to a new hashtag.
And a new hashtag. So on that note, Maria, welcome to the Innovation Calling.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, so smart cities. Can you give a, like the 50,000 foot view of smart cities? What is it? And can you give examples of some of the consulting work you're doing right now within smart cities?
Absolutely. So I'm sure because you guys have been in this space a little bit too, every single person has a different definition of what a smart city is. I think if the cities knew what a smart city was, then we would all be smart cities. But we need to look at it from that 50,000 level. Smart cities are the connected cities, the cities that actually use physical and digital space, interact with our citizens, and provide efficient resources, the opportunity to create business insights from data, and the ability to actually plan and derive what a smart city is going to look like in the future. So if we embed what we know of today and what citizens need, the services as well as the products, you're going to see IoT, you're going to see data, you're going to see cloud computing, and most of all, you're going to see people actually moving and interacting with the city. So we're going from basically dumb spaces, dumb buildings, to buildings that interact with us and, in quotes, are smart.
All right. So I want to specifically ask for cities too, because I'm going to selfishly ask this just because I told you I'm doing work with smart buildings. How are cities, are they, is it easy for them to make the financial case to like really plan and think about this and incorporate a lot of this as a lot of this is future, right? Versus now. How are they making the case to really work on these initiatives?
They're looking at it more from business models now. So citizens are pushing our politicians, our government, and people that make decisions about how we live, work, and play. They're pushing them to actually look at a different business model. So when we go into a store and we look at how much milk costs, there's always 60 million people behind that, from the farmer to the politician to the person that actually needs to make money at the store. But there is some type of efficiency behind that where they know if it's more than $4, we will not be able to sell it. Well, businesses are now looking at different models, just like a citizen has to act more like a business. So the city looks at their policies, they look at their procurement rules and regulations, and they look at their departments. How are our departments interacting, and how are those departments inefficient? We look at legacy systems. If our systems in terms of IT, data, cloud, those types of things are not interactive, and if they're not efficient, not only are you going to be wasting taxpayer dollars, but you're not going to be able to compete. Therefore, you won't be able to get the companies, the jobs, the citizens, the people that make the economy go round. What we call a prosperous economy also has to be competitive. So you hear a lot, especially here in North Texas, you hear a lot about, oh, we're going to try and encourage Californians to come here because it's a better, you know, cost of living. Woo-hoo. But do Californians want to give up water? Do they want to give up sun? Do they want to give up that vibrant, innovative type of style of living and working? So what we're trying to do here with smart cities is we're trying to encourage people to connect with their city. Cities will have no choice. They could talk all the time about, oh, it's going to cost too much, or we don't understand what to implement, but their business model will change, and so will the staff that they hire to implement those business models.
I mean, you said so many different things. First and foremost is Woohoo, go California. Secondly, though, is I can't help but think I'm gonna pick on Dallas. And there's nothing wrong with Dallas. I enjoy it immensely. But the truth of it is downtown Dallas is empty outside Monday through Friday. Saturdays and Sundays, it is virtually empty. There's not much life there. I know there's a lot of work going towards driving interest back in, but people have spread out and moved to the suburbs where there is more attractiveness for various reasons. So are you telling me, if I understand correctly with what you're saying, smart cities, are we talking about smart cities like downtowns like Dallas, or are we talking about suburban type smart cities where it's kind of all encompassing, where you've got the family entertainment kind of things as well as business interacting with the infrastructure of the current brick and mortar buildings that we're talking about? Can you clarify that for me?
So what if I told you that downtown Dallas has gone through a revitalization process because they realized 5 years ago, if we do not integrate smart technologies and smart processes into who we are, we will not have the people downtown. We will not have the businesses downtown. And yes, they will go to other cities. What if I told you that Dallas addressed that? And they actually work together to implement connectivity, create urbanization through connecting people to their space. So in other words, maybe it's a live park where you take your dog, where you can go see a concert, where you can go eat, where you don't have to worry about parking your car or it not being lit at night. So now you've got an urbanized area that's gone digital, that's connected, that's safe, and that is more oriented towards people.
Right.
The walkability of a town. What if I told you that Dallas had said, we are concerned about not having the people downtown. We're concerned about being that commuter town where everybody comes in the morning and they're gone by five. Where 100 years ago, there were grocery stores, there was amazing retail, there were little mom and pop delis that fed people so people could work and live where they were.
Exactly.
So there is a revitalization of downtown that's happening, and it's basically because of collaboration between multiple organizations, the state. We're going to go into P3, kind of organized private partnerships that really work with the public partner, which could be your city of Dallas, or it could be the state of Texas, it could be any of those. When you move out to your suburbs, people don't want to just go to work in the morning, drive and commute out, and then come home and go into their homes. What cities are doing, and there's plenty of them here in North Texas, is they're creating experience. And experience is extremely important to a smart city. So how do I get Erin out with her family at night after she's been at work all day? I want her to kick off her heels and head right back out the door to go and spend some money in a restaurant, go play with the dog in the park, go watch a movie maybe that's in the park outdoors, creating an experience where she can not only blog about it, she can get on social media, but she can also tell the city via an app or via some digital method, hey, this was a great idea. You guys got to continue to do this. And on the way home, now that I'm walking, hey, you guys need to repair the sidewalk because I don't like it. So using a 311 app. But now there's a communication between Erin and the city and where she lives. And now she's not just a commuter. She's actually living in her city and enjoying her city. And therefore, Erin is probably going to stay and not go and leave Dallas to go live in Chicago. And who wants to go live in that snow right now, right?
So are there I'm thinking as you give that whole thing, there's the Star, right? Here in Frisco, Jerry Jones's headquarters, Cowboys headquarters. So they do a movie night there, right? And you can do this movie, and as cities build, would they, I guess this is part of the discussion, how can you help us enable our smart cities initiatives? And if so, is it something that there's incentives behind? It's just really interesting. I thought of smart cities as connected cities, right? Mm-hmm. Like stoplights and buildings. And I never thought of it as, I never thought of it as interactions too. So are there incentives for companies to come and be part of a smart cities initiative?
Absolutely. And you're right. Smart cities are connected cities. They're connected through data. They're connected through the devices that we use, because almost everybody now has a mobile device. So your ability to communicate, to connect, and to talk, and to experience something, you could talk about it via your mobile device. You could receive information via your mobile device. And so that's just one area that we can actually become part of a connected city. But the city now is connected to you. So one of the things that you see cities not doing anymore is just relying on their own councils, government, to make decisions about how our tax dollars are spent. They've learned, they understand that that is not the wave of the future. A citizen who is futuristic, innovative, creative, experiences their community, knows their community really, really well. And they are the best person to ask, what should we invest in if we want to be a smart community? If we open a data portal, will you give us some of your data so that we can learn the STAR, the sports complexes? We want to encourage people that are involved in athletics or want to be healthy and fit. Wellness, maybe that is one of the things that North Texas hangs their hat on. But we're always looking for how do we visualize the future and how do we bring it back to what we have today and the resources that we can use. And to me, that core thing is people. Use the people that are there. I mean, we always go and talk to our customers when we have a business, don't we? We go out and we find out, what do you want? What will enhance the product? How much would you pay for this? So why don't we do that as a smart city or as a city that wants to be smart? Get the citizen involved, help them engage, learn from their experiences, and you can visualize what you're going to be in 20, 25, 50 years.
Interesting. So segue it. That's a perfect segue, Sia.
Yeah.
Into the IO.
Well, so, I was going to give her that shining moment. Okay. So what Aaron was talking about is IoT, Internet of Things. As I'm hearing you now, it seems like IoT is kind of like the underlying base foundation, you know, to enable the technology to be executed upon. But once you reach out to the people, and I do want to ask about this, but I'll finish this thought. But once you reach out to the people, what you're doing is now creating advocacy. As much as we want our customers to buy our products and we want to keep them as our customers, we want them to become our cheerleaders. And it sounds like to me, connected cities and smart cities is now understanding that idea of now we can have a whole population of cheerleaders with their hometown pride because they're actually interacting and they're actually contributing to the environment of their community.
Exactly.
And it's that ownership of it. People mm-hmm. now feel some ownership with whatever city that they're in. So IoT, that's great. But it sounds like you're shifting away from IoT. So I see you're smiling at me. Well, so what is it? What is it? Because it's IoT. Hey, I want my device to work, but you're saying right. It's not just IoT anymore. What is it?
Here's my prediction. It is IoT that is going to get these cities to be smart, because obviously that is the Internet of Things. That's how things interact and connect. But it is going to shift. It's going to be the IOP, which is the Internet of People. People are going to start to drive what goes into a city. They're going to start to drive what investments get made into a city. If you have a big carrier that comes into a city, and we've all heard this before, the carrier is going to be interested in investing in dense urbanization. But what if you have an amazing city that is growing just north of you? The investment that needs to be made for connectivity may not be the top priority of a carrier. But what if those people are driving that? What if they are connected? What if they are constantly requiring higher connectivity, no latency, higher bandwidth? The people will start to say, this is what we need. We need you to make an investment in us. And I think it's going to start with looking at more of a P4 model.
So before you say P4, talk to me about P1, 2, 3 and 4. A lot of P.
A lot of P's. You've got public, which is going to be government, civil servants, folks that tax dollars that are going to be spent, right? You've got private partnerships, which are going to be more your corporations, industry, your innovative thinkers, your entrepreneurs. No smart city is going to be healthy without entrepreneurship because of the innovation and creativity that comes from them. And the partnerships are also going to include, which is a fourth, which is people. So the people being the core, they're going to drive experience. They're going to drive what we're now calling more of a prosumer industry. So the prosumer is going to be the person that is actually producing something. They may put solar panels on their roof. So now they become an electricity producer. So they may actually be driving a new business model for our utility companies. Our utility companies may say, hey, you've got electricity over here. Can I buy that from you? Because I have a lot of people that want to use air conditioning here in Texas between 5 and 7 p.m. I also want to make sure that you are part of that production. You're part of the energy cycle on the ecosystem. So now you've got people that are producing as well as consuming. I think that when you look at, I know there were a lot of P's and I apologize, but when you think about it in your mind and we try and do these connections on whiteboards, it helps you understand and helps you see how there are key things that have to be in terms of assets for a city to be smart.
So does it so how much does the average city, like on a connected basis, where are they now compared to where they need to be able to accommodate something like that? Pursumer? Is that what you call it?
Pursumers. Yes.
I'm sorry.
New word for it.
We cannot make that word go like big. Yeah. It's
so awkward.
I have a 12-year-old humor and it's just not working. I'm sorry. It's just not.
Well, then you could focus on IOP.
Pursumer, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. IOP. Just stick with IOP.
We got it.
Where are we compared to where we really need to be able, because that can't be that far off.
No, and I don't think it is. I mean, I think we are closer than we think. Technology does take some time to be adopted, but it's there. I mean, if you look back, and I love doing this, is I look back at some of the predictions by people that were innovators or entrepreneurs or social leaders, and you look back at people like Tesla, who said, one day we are going to be completely wireless. You will not have to be tethered to a line. Well, back in his day, that was just revolutionary. And oh my gosh, what is this guy talking
about?
That's
craziness, actually, in his day. I mean, they're still selling the concept of electricity.
Right. Now we have a millennial generation and a Generation Z that looks at you and goes, what the heck is that dial? And how is that like connected with a wire? We need wires. It's just foreign concept to them. I don't think we're that far off. I think some of the things that you're going to start to see are cities are going to start to invest in different staff. As I alluded to earlier, it's going to be more AI. Do we need a chief artificial intelligence officer? Do we need a chief data officer? Do we need a CIO that is shared across multiple cities because we want to interconnect traffic or we want to interconnect health and wellness? And what will those staff members look like and be responsible for? Are we going to have robots that are going to be basically taking advancements in medicine and looking at asset management? Those types of things are all going to come to fruition because the technology is already there. Yes, we do need to grow out the connectivity piece, and that's where 5G will come in. Yes, we do need to grow out the ecosystem where we don't have so many different platforms and services and software and hardware that maybe we can start talking together and collaborate so that we actually have some type of form of interconnectivity with the technology that we're embedding into our cities.
So in essence, you're saying, you're arguing basically open source everything. No more proprietary.
Share. Collaborate.
Share, collaborate. And listen, major corporations that do proprietary technology, iPhone. So I think that is awesome. I can't help but think, you know, the benefit of having a smart city, let's say, okay, so a city is successful in bringing people back into the downtown. So there's away from the sprawl, if you will. And they're in buildings. And I can't help but think, heaven forbid there should be a fire. It'll be very educated. The fire department will know instantly. They will know without having 911 like bogged down with all the phone calls and et cetera. They'll know if there's a fire on the fourth floor or whatever. That's so very exciting. So,
but it's also back to the key cog, which is people. So that person is carrying a mobile device. That person has, you know, a location services. That person enters a building with a badge. So we know if there is a fire in a building, that person entered with a badge. We know that person didn't exit. We know what time he came in, and we know what floor that person works on. So how are we going to actually get that person out safely when we know that he is in, or he or she is in that building? It also is going to come down, if you want to talk about your smart buildings. Mm-hmm. When I park my car in the morning and I have to use the walkway, and they actually know through license plate reading, they know my car is there and I'm supposed to be there and I'm taking up one parking spot. So now they know, okay, well, we've got 170 parking spots taken up today. We have 30 free. We can open up for visitors. I walk through, I go through a turnstile. I'm using my RFID tag. You know I'm there. And every day I go eat a spinach salad with tomatoes and strawberries. Inside the building is the cafeteria, and they know, okay, Maria's coming to work again today. How about we have a spinach salad available just in case she comes down to the cafeteria? So you're going to start to be able to meet the needs of people just by learning their habits. Artificial intelligence, machine learning, all of those types of things will get embedded.
I'm just thinking from a security standpoint. If you're leaving the building late at night, going into a garage, the cameras immediately are on, like that floor is activated, or maybe the security is like, hey, or talking to you. So maybe they're not physically there with you, or I'm digging this.
Yes.
Very much digging it.
And apps can be generated by people that engage in an open market development concept. So it's not just the big dogs on the block like Apple or Google or others that try and develop these apps. There's actually people, young people, old people that can actually go inside some type of open coding market development space where they could say, I had an idea. I just want to do this, but I don't know how to develop it. So people start to talk. They start to get engaged. They start to build out the apps that we are going to need, generating new jobs, generating new services, and meeting the needs of what people have today.
I was going to say, it's really driving the changes. I hear people saying like, oh, if we start automating, you know, AI, big data, it's going to kill my job. Quite frankly, we've had this discussion before, and I want to go in detail later in life, but it's not necessarily killing jobs. It's just evolving how we are leveraged as a workforce and workspace. And yeah, maybe there's going to be a lot of retraining. Our generational group is probably going to be in doing that hiccup. I think the next gen, Z and on, as they enter the workforce, they're going to be, it's going to be intuitive for them because they expect it. They are used to it. They assume it's going to be available to them.
Well, I think we're like the COBOL coders of our time, right? Like, no, I'm for real. Like,
girl,
you know, like we
COBOL
knew how.
COBOL predates me. I don't know what you're talking about.
But it's like, it's that whole, like, either you evolve or you die. And either I'm just going to sit and, you know, all those people that refuse to, they might have a job in like the archaic systems, but they didn't really. And I think that's always going to change with businesses. But I know as I'm listening to you, I'm like, wow, there's just going to be so many more job opportunities if you're trained for, or if you seek that, or if you pursue that, or, you know, and I see it a lot in tech. It's not a matter of going to get another degree. It's just kind of inserting yourself into the, well, I know we're going to be doing this. I want to learn this. Help me out. And I think you just have to be more aware of that.
Or what if the new jobs are less technically focused and they become more focused on human intention?
Yeah.
They become more focused on psychology, like understanding that we're moving to more of a service model. So do we need to understand habits of people? Do we need to understand needs of people? Do we need to understand what people are going to need in the future and look from the future back instead of just sitting down and saying, well, I'm going to develop an app because right now I'm ticked off because I'm stuck in traffic. You look at the future and say, well, what if I don't have a car? What if it's a flying car? Or what if it's an Uber type of service model?
Flying backpack.
Yes.
Thing.
But that may take somebody that understands psychology or sociology, somebody who understands social interactions and how they intertwine with human intention. And that type of thing could be the future jobs. And our kids are probably going to be looking at us going, okay, so I'm not doing engineering or I'm not doing IT. Not saying those jobs are going away. They are extremely important. But I do think there's going to be this like bloom of new jobs that focus more on, instead of left side of the brain, more right side, or more right side of the brain to the left side. You're looking at intertwining both.
I can't help but think Jetsons in my head right now. Like watching you talk, and I just feel like these like flying machines all connected. You're talking about traffic, how literally, because eventually we're going to look at connected cars, a component obviously, and then all the traffic just flowing accordingly because it knows, you know, at 5 p.m. they know there's going to be a huge rush of people leaving at certain times. How do they do the lights? And it's that's already happening, but in a much more educated way, making the decisioning of, hey, block 1, 2, 3, 4 is jammed up for whatever. Maybe there's a car wreck, so that the lights all have the intelligence to talk to each other to do the, and this is a network term, maybe they can do an OSPF and route you elsewhere, which is open shortest path first. That's right. I knew it. I'm so excited for this. It is.
Well, it's back to Aaron's comment, you know, like how far off are we? And are we already a smart city and just don't know it yet? I think that the digitalization path and that fourth revolution is it's here. We are just trying to figure out how do we embed technology? How do we use technology? How do we leverage it for efficiency of resources? And how do we actually include people into that process? So in 25 years, we're not going, wow, I wish we wouldn't have made that investment. I wish we would have looked at what the citizens really were going to need. So I think modernization is going, it's a huge play right now.
So you this is all exciting and good, but I can't help but think of the practicality and the costs and who's going to pay for this. And is this going to be something that, yes, the people are going to demand it at some point, maybe not now, but are we going to wait till we get to that point before we decide to develop this? I mean, what initiatives are being made now that you're seeing, or are you still having those conversations with the government, if you will, to drive this?
No, I'm seeing more models where the citizen is now looking at investing. So private entities will invest in infrastructure. They'll invest in systems and solutions because they see where the ROI down the road is coming. So the burden is not going to be just on our cities and our government. This is going to be a burden that the, and if you want to call it a burden, but I think if you consolidate and I think if you work through the process of saying, here are some of the systems that will never go out of style, they're futuristic, we're making an investment because we know that that investment's going to pay off. I don't see cities being able to monetize data so much as being able to say, see the return on investment through efficiency or dollars saved. So departments are talking to one another. We know when the pipe is needing maintenance. We know when electricity shortages are going to happen. And we know where most accidents happen. So we're going to redesign the intersection. You're going to start to see some of those things used through machine learning and algorithms that can put the pieces together. So I don't see that cities are going to be burdened with the whole bill. It's not like a, you know, parents sending their child to university. Ah, that child is at university and you are saddled with the bill. I think it's going to be shared. I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Well, here's the irony of this whole thing. So as we're recording this, we're at the University of North Texas. Thank you for letting us use the room. We all met at an Inspire Frisco event. So I'm basically, because of the summons I did, I've been heavily involved in the city of Frisco and what they're doing. And the whole University of Texas is here because they're working on all these new programs. Like they have an AI program. They've got all this technology, all this innovation. The city of Frisco is really working to drive an entrepreneurial community. And it's like, as this whole thing that we're talking, I'm like, oh, I see what they're doing. Now I see this makes sense. I see. So from a perspective of what cities are doing, I think without knowing a lot of the inside track, you can look at Frisco as really obviously taking on a lot of this because it just all really fits with the pieces that you're laying out.
Yep. And they're all going to come together eventually. Yeah. We just need to watch it happen.
And I'm absolutely an advocate for Frisco because I pay my taxes here and that sounds great and dandy and all. But what about, and then Frisco is relatively a new town and growing city now. They've got so many great businesses that have come here and good job, Frisco. But, you know, you have established huge cities like Dallas that they aren't, they've got a different set of challenges, I think, versus what Frisco has. Frisco's new, so we can build new, right? We can make it happen. What about those existing infrastructure where it's like, look, I've got a 32-foot skyscraper here, and I've got 20% capacity.
It's probably higher than 32 feet.
Yes. Did I say feet? Yeah. Floors!
Gosh darn it! But I do see Dallas.
Actually, I'm really short, so 32 feet is really tall for me, so back off.
But Dallas has a long, long, rich history. And they're having to take some of that history and revamp it to look like a future. And there's one thing that Dallas has done really, really well. It has put together some collaborative partners. Back to your P4. But they have gotten these guys in a room to talk. And now they have made investments in the city that are really being used as pilots for other cities to see. Yeah. And they're focused on that connected living, on the mobility slash, you know, transportation and the IoT connectivity. So you see where they are really trying to monetize what they're trying to do so that it brands them as a destination city. So getting away from that commuter 9 to 5, you know, I work for E&Y or I work for Bank of America and I come into the city and I leave at night. That's gone. There is now vibrance that's being percolated up because Dallas 5 years ago said, we need to do something about what we're looking at out here. And I think they're making the right investments, but I do think you've got to look at your history and learn from what you did. It was a vibrant town, then it kind of went dead. But you put DART in there, you put parks, you put these work, live, and play environments, you attract the millennials, you attract the Gen Zs, and you'd be amazed at how vibrant now Dallas is going to be. Just like Frisco is doing this northern development up here just below 360, they are going to focus on who needs to come to this city to make it competitive, to make it vibrant, and how are we going to build the experience to attract them? So if you want to attract some of these guys from the high tech or from the transportation logistics community, you're going to have a place for them to live. You're going to have them connected where they live, and you're going to have them want to be here, which is to create some type of visualization around the experience. So an augmented reality or visual reality to get them to be here to grow in this city. And yeah, I see those cars coming from Dallas to Frisco every night. And you're just like, why am I sitting on a tollway when I just paid $10 to sit in traffic? So those issues are going to have to be solved. And it's probably going to be with, hey, you don't have to get in a car. We're going to get the businesses to be here. You could live right where you work. And by the way, let's all meet for a cocktail afterwards because we have great restaurants and places to meet.
I am so excited. I am almost like, are we there yet? We're actually there. Yeah, we're in it. We're very much in it. I guess I can't help but think, and I'm picking on Dallas and Frisco as examples. We are not.
Just because what we know.
It's we're here, and it's just local and great. So we'll talk about, never mind. We'll just talk about Dallas. And I'll be safe. But yeah. I can't help but think with cities like Dallas, for example, it's the city or L.A., downtown L.A., no one wants to hang out there, but they've done a lot of work as well to try to reattract people. I'm sensing it's almost they're catering to different demographics. I almost feel like Dallas is catering to a younger, vibrant energy, if you will, of a workforce and living force. So it's different types of entertainment, different types of interaction, whereas, you know, Frisco is very family-oriented. It's very focused on perhaps slightly different styles of entertainment. It's not always drinking and eating, apparently, or it could be drinking and eating, but maybe that's not the only thing. Maybe it's included with, you know, dogs, you know, at a dog park or something like that, right? So I'm seeing and I'm sensing. I can't help but think Disneyland. Okay, I feel like we're becoming a little or demanding. I think in our own way, as some form of Disneyland. I'm not talking about the culture of Disneyland, which is, you know, everyone's happy. I'm just talking about the interaction. Disneyland does a very good job of immersing the guests into their park. Is that what we're saying? Is IOP is eventually going to be something a bit more of a realistic immersion?
I think so. I believe so. When let's take Los Angeles, seeing you brought them up. I mean, they realized we got a problem with pollution and we got a problem with people not working out, being fit, and really getting into the city. Well, they've solved that problem. They're starting to really address those problems. And now people are like, okay, well, I could live here. I could actually walk to work and I'm not choking on smog or pollution. Just small steps, right? You look at Detroit. Fantastic revitalization. But they're doing it through, let's buy up the real estate, let's revamp the real estate, let's put entrepreneurs, and let's build these P4 type of environments where we get kids from the basketball field that can come in and design an app to help them play basketball and to help them actually grow with a technology company. Those types of things are happening. And Kansas City is another great example of what's going on. Ohio, that won some of those smart city grants and awards, they are having to figure out, okay, well, how do we take what's old, needs to be revitalized, and make it future-proof? This future-proofing these cities is going to be imperative. Otherwise, you're not going to get the people, you're not going to get the companies, and you won't get the jobs. And that means economy goes down. Same with Dallas, the cycle they went through, right? Well, we have these ruts when we go through. And if you base yourself on one economy, finance, technology, you can have these huge dips where people leave, the companies get out, and all of a sudden now your tax dollars are way down and you've made commitments. You may have built roads, you may have built schools, and all of a sudden you start to see boards going up because you can't afford them anymore. That is what the cities are trying really hard right now to avoid. And they know that it has to be smart in order to avoid those types of dips when things are bad. We all go through them, right?
Yeah.
So just out of curiosity, where do we stand versus the world when it comes to smart cities?
Yeah, we could be doing better. There is a really good, there's a lot of folks out there that have done some research on this. There are some world sources that have looked at the top smart cities, which surprised me on a couple of those lists. You have a lot of Asian cities that you kind of think of them as hard to change or not wanting to give up privacy, those types of things. And yet they are in the top 10, top 20 cities of being smart. Barcelona, London, and you see this huge amounts of urban density. And maybe that's what promotes it or makes people pivot to think, okay, I cannot have these people living on top of me and not have a smart city where we need more resources, more services, and yet we need more tax dollars to pay for it. So they've come up with different business models to become smart. And they've actually included corporations, innovators, entrepreneurs, investing in accelerators to come up with ideas, doing pilots so that the technology is not separate from what actually is going on in the smart city. The cities are working and collaborating to try and make their city smart. There's not a lot of smart cities. New York is one that makes the top, top list, but we have a little bit of ways to go. And I think it's going to have to come with the realization that a city needs to operate on a different business model.
Or operate as a business model, period.
Period, yes.
And not a government agency.
Yes, because those models, they're gone.
Well, this has been very eye-opening, very interesting. I want to thank you so much for coming and talking about this with us today. If somebody wanted to get a hold of you, where is the best place for them to connect with you?
So LinkedIn is definitely available. Okay. I have my email and my cell on there, so you can definitely get in touch with me that way. Probably the best way, because I'm on my LinkedIn. And
it's Maria Smith Breckenridge on LinkedIn, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, I didn't do Smith Breckenridge. My apologies.
No, it's all good. It's all good. My husband forgets I have a Smith, but hey, we're good.
That's all right. Yeah, I never added anything onto mine. I just left it at Smith. Well, Maria, thank you so much for doing this today. I knew this was going to be an awesome conversation. This has been very intriguing. It's like I said, it's just so like, I get it now. Clyde Warren Park down in Dallas.
Say Clyde Warren Park. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that opened up like 5 years ago too.
Yeah,
exactly. They got bigger plans to make it better.
Wow.
That is awesome. Okay, so for those of you that are not in the Dallas area, by all means, seriously, they've done some really cool stuff. And Clyde Warren Park, huge, how many acres? It's a ginormous park in the middle of Dallas, downtown Dallas area, and they do all sorts of fun things there. So sorry, Dallas, wasn't trying to knock you. And and of course, Frisco, really big thank you to UNT Frisco for letting us crash in and borrow this room while we had Maria in front of us. But if there's any other questions, by all means, please like, subscribe, and
comment on this.
Comment. Yeah, for sure. Thanks for joining us again. And that wraps it up for another round of Innovation Calling.
Thank you, ladies.